This recording, England 59, is copyright the International Dialects of English Archive. Comma Gets a Cure is copyright Douglas N. Onaroff, Jill McCullough, and Barbara Somerville.
Well, here's a story for you. Sarah Perry was a veterinary nurse who had been working daily at an old zoo in a deserted district of the territory. So she was very happy to start a new job at the superb private practice in the North Square near the Duke Street Tower. The area was much nearer for her and more to her liking. Even so, on her first morning, she felt stressed. She ate a bowl of porridge, checked herself in the mirror, and washed her face in a hurry. Then she put on a plain yellow dress and a fleece jacket, picked up her kit, and headed for work. When she got there, there was a woman with a goose waiting for her. The woman gave Sarah an official letter from the vet. The letter implied that the animal could be suffering from a rare form of foot and mouth disease, which was surprising because normally you would only expect to see it in a dog or a goat. Sarah was sentimental, so this made her feel sorry for the beautiful bird. Before long, the icky goose began to strut around the office like a lunatic, which made an unsanitary mess. The goose's owner, Mary Harrison, kept calling, "Comma, Comma," which Sarah thought was an odd choice for a name. Comma was strong and huge, so it would take some force to trap her, but Sarah had a different idea. First she tried gently stroking the goose's lower back with her palm, then singing a tune to her. Finally she administered ether. Her efforts were not futile. In no time the goose began to tire, so Sarah was able to hold on to Comma and give her a relaxing bath. Once Sarah had managed to bathe the goose, she wiped her off with a cloth and laid her on her right side. Then Sarah confirmed the vet's diagnosis. Almost immediately she remembered an effective treatment that required her to measure out a lot of medicine. Sarah warned that this course of treatment might be expensive, either 5 or 6 times the cost of penicillin. I can't imagine paying so much, but Mrs. Harrison, a millionaire lawyer, thought it was a fair price for a cure. Yeah, no, I mean, my accent seems to come from around Battersea or Clapham, because although I was born in Merton, I ended up going to school out in the suburbs. They built a lot of council estates after the war around London, so you had all these satellite developments, and moved a lot of people out. What you had was the skilled working class moved out to the council estates, and the kind of lower middle class clerical types would move into private developments. So you had this all around London. So what you find is that people tend to get moved out from the same area. So if you came from the southwest, you got moved further out southwest. If you came from East End, you went to Essex. If you came from southeast, you went to Kent. From North London, you went to Hertfordshire, that sort of thing. So the accents are actually pretty much preserved. And the other thing you notice about the accents is the more central they are, the faster the people tend to speak them. So when you go out to Brighton now, I mean, the original accents are all buried by the London ones. As you went out, it would have been more yokel type. But now all that happens is when you go to Brighton, they still speak the same, but they start slowing down. It's really boring. And the southwest London accent is actually a very boring one. It's a very monotone. So if you do stuff at the BBC, as I do now and again, when they interview me, it's okay for me to have my accent, but when they pay me to do radio journalism, they actually have to get someone how to tell me to speak proper, which is like very frustrating, because then you get on the bus and you go, oh, I want to go to post office on Bethnal Green Road, Turin Street, or instead of saying it like that, you go, oh, excuse me, I'd like to go to the post office on Turin Street, and go, No, I don't speak like that, really. The BBC have screwed my mind. So an incident from, I guess, because I should say that as an adult I moved to North London in 1985. First of all, I went to Stoke Newington, and then I'd been living in Kennington, which is quite central, just up from Brixton, about a 20 minute walk from Trafalgar Square, which is right in the centre of town. And then I moved down to Bethnal Green later on in 85, towards the end, and lived there for a while, went to Poplar, got a nice council flat up there, then got moved back up to Bethnal Green up by Brick Lane in the mainly Muslim area, which is a great place to live, because you've got, I mean, the Muslim culture, you might criticise patriarchal aspects of it, but it's very family orientated. So when you're on the predominantly Muslim estate, as I ended up, having convince, because being a white council tenant, you have to convince the council that you're not racist or you're perceived as white. I mean, ethnicity is constructed. One can argue that I'm actually Afro-Celt, having an Irish background, but whatever. You know, there's a lot less crime on the Muslim estate, so it has been traditionally. Now there's more drugs coming in, especially with crack coming in. It's a bit more of a problem, but basically it's a more peaceful life living on the predominantly, you know, Muslim estates. And I was going to tell you a quick story from my childhood. So when I was at school, I ended up going to a school called Shearwater County Secondary School, which there's a band called The Jam came from that school, a guy called Paul Weller, who I always thought was an idiot when I was at school. He used to pose around with his guitar and creep to the teacher, so he was allowed to practice in the music room. We didn't have a sixth form or anything at the school, so he left when he was 16, which was a school leaving age once I'd raised it. But anyway, my best mate, Mick Carver, his older brother, were Paul Weller's best mates, because Weller was a bit older than me, 3 years maybe, and their council houses backed onto each other, the gardens. That's a local authority housing. So I remember, I always thought he was an idiot, and the last time I ever spoke to him, it's a classic if you're into punk culture. We were coming off the Mabry estate, which was where Weller and a big, there were two big council estates, Shearwater and Mabry, next to each other. We were coming off the Mabry, me and Mick Carver, and we ran into Weller with his, Mick Carver's two brothers. So Weller had just got in the charts with his first single by The Jam, lower 20s, in the city, and so he was very pleased with himself, as he always would be. So he says to me, "Oh, I'm famous now, do you want my autograph?" And I said, rude word, "Fuck off, I'm a punk, do you want mine?" So that's a story of what it was like growing up.